Welcome to Blackhawks Insider, the official podcast of the Chicago Blackhawks, presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Drive what Kane and Taves drive. I'm Carter Baum, and under the weather, Carter Baum. And coming up on this week's episode, we discuss the resurgent Dominique Kubalik and his current six-game point streak, Patrick Kane as he nears 1,000 career points, Jonathan Taves and his three straight multi-point nights. And we have gold medalist Kendall Coyne joining the show to look ahead to her upcoming Blackhawks Originals feature, As Fast As Her, and discuss the upcoming 3-on-3 women's tournament taking place at the 2020 NHL All-Star Weekend. All that and more coming up on Blackhawks Insider, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. It's all about the drive.
Hey Blackhawks fans, your local Chevy dealers have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for you. Take your best shot to win the 2020 Chicago Blackhawks Custom Blazer. It's a one-of-a-kind performance machine with its custom Blackhawks leather interior and Chicago skyline grille. You can't win if you don't enter, so go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and register right now. You must be 18 years or older to enter. Someone's got to win, so it might as well be you. Go for it. Drive what Kane and Taves drive.
Welcome into Blackhawks Insider. I am Carter Baum. Believe it or not, gentlemen, a little under the weather this week.
Got a frog in your throat?
A little bit.
He's playing hurt.
A little playing hurt, but you know, everyone's got to suck it up, yeah, and play through the pain. We're here. It's a Wednesday. We're recording the podcast. We've got a good one on the docket today. Kendall Coyne joining us later on in the show, of course, such an icon in the women's hockey game, and a big announcement coming out that the women are making another appearance at the NHL All-Star Game. They'll play a 3-on-3 tournament. There's a Blackhawks Originals feature coming out on her and what the last year has been like for her since she became the first woman to take part in the fastest skater competition a year ago. It's called As Fast As Her. It debuts on January 22nd. So a great conversation with her later in the show. But first off, guys, we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon. Blackhawks fresh off an overtime win over the Ottawa Senators, 3-2, another come-from-behind win. Normally, we would probably start off the show by talking about Patrick Kane and how he's got 997 points now. We talked a little bit about it last week, but probably for the first time ever, a young rookie by the name of Dominique Kubalik is going to overtake the conversation because he has 7 of the last 11 Blackhawks goals. He's on a six-game point streak, a five-game goal streak, multiple goals in his last two games, and he once again stole the show again last night.
And they needed him too, right? They needed a player to step up. We've been talking about that all season long. Someone's got to step up here, whether it's Nylander or whoever. And here we go. Kubalik is the guy who, when he touches the puck now, I think he's going to score almost every time, right? He's putting himself in great spots, scoring the bulk of his goals from in front, although we did see the breakaway. Nice move last night. Just a revelation for Stan Bowman to bring in a guy like that for a draft pick from the LA Kings.
Gave up a fifth-round pick from Arizona to get Kubalik. He was a seventh-round pick from the Kings.
And now you're talking about a first-line player who could potentially score 30 goals this season and kind of still learning the North American game a little bit, still learning his role with the Blackhawks in the NHL. And, boy, Berhegas looks really confident now.
And Stan said that this summer, and none of us knew who Dominic Kubalik was, and he said, this guy's going to be a top six player for us, and a guy the Kings kind of passed on and didn't want. And when he first came in, too, and I like what Jeremy and the staff did with him, too, is he started off third-line minutes. He started, you know, no special teams, really, kind of like, all right, he played well. He was always responsible. You'd notice him. He could shoot the puck. He scored a couple nice goals in the preseason. Look good in training camp, but let's ease him into this. Let's see what he can do. Let's try and find a role for him. And all of a sudden now he's on your first line with Kane and Taves, just lighting the league on fire. So a great find by the Blackhawks staff and a nice job by the coaching staff, just bringing him up and not giving him too much too early. But, geez, you go back to that Ottawa game, but he had 3 shots in his first shift. He was out high, like you said, Chris. He finds himself in good spots, and he's confident right now. And I think back to 2 games ago when Gizmo interviewed him as the first star of the game, and he said, man, you must be feeling good right now. And he goes, feeling pretty good. Yeah, I am feeling pretty good out there right now, and he should be.
Well, he leads all rookies in the NHL in goals. And what's interesting for me, I've been watching, you know, I watch Twitter during games, and it's fun to watch, like, kind of the national media kind of chime in on Kubalik. Now, you didn't hear anything, right?
Yeah.
And now there's, like, you know, Darren Dreger says something. I was just talking about this. Ray Ferraro. now he's starting to get the name recognition out there. And what that could lead to, if he keeps scoring at this pace, is possibly a nomination for the Calder Trophy, which would be a big boon for really the Blackhawks organization to have a guy like that already contributing like that and being the national picture.
Yeah, and you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself. So I think the last time we taped a podcast last week, I said, I'll pencil him in the rest of his career as a 20-goal scorer. I mean, he's a 30-goal scorer, I think, now. I think I misspoke on this guy. The ceiling just keeps getting higher and higher for him.
Shot, right? I mean, he's got a terrific shot.
Yeah.
He's got a little time and space, and once he gets it off, it's going to go in.
Yep.
If he continues on his current pace, he could hit 20 goals by the end of the night.
Yeah,
so
no kidding.
You don't know.
Yeah.
But 18 goals for Dominik Kubalík. Another strong performance last night as well from Jonathan Toews. 3 points factoring in all three goals. An assist on each of Kubalík's goals, as well as, no big deal, the game winner. His 12th overtime goal, the most for any NHL player since the 3-on-3 format was introduced before the 15-16 season. Captain Clutch continues to come through when it counts for the Blackhawks. That's his third straight multi-point game as well.
Yeah, all season long, you know, we kept waiting for him to kind of string games together.
Yeah.
He would have one great game and go, okay, here we go. You know, Toews is kicking in, and it wasn't there. And then recently he started to put them together, and then, you know, he talked to him in the dressing room, Bernie, and said, hey, things are going well. He's like, are they? Are they going that well? Look at my numbers. And I'm like, well, now you can look at the numbers. Multi-point performances in what, the last three games, and really kind of carried the Blackhawks, him and Kubalík, I thought, and of course, you know, Patrick Kane in there as well. But those three guys have really spearheaded this kind of resurgence from the Hawks.
The superstar players, points matter. You know that. And it's about the team. Toews is an amazing leader, but the points still matter. These guys still want to score points every night. They still want to be up there in the standings. They want to lead the team in points. Your star guys, that's what motivates them and drives them. And it's a good thing, because if they're not scoring, the team's probably not winning. And certainly on this team, we've seen that this year, that their studs need to carry the mail. But you're right, Chris, if you want to string a bunch of wins together, you're going to need some secondary scoring. Dominic's doing that. You know, you said Nylander, maybe Doc, get some other guys to contribute. Now you can really start getting yourself back in the hunt here. But your superstar guys, they want points. And if you're losing some games, or you're winning two, losing one, if you're not, that you're going to get that answer from Toews. I am doing well. Well, my stats don't say it. Now that he's stringing some points together, he looks fast out there. He's playing well. The team's playing better, I think. Their team game is better. And it seems like they got a little jump when they put Kane, Toews, and Kubalík together too, didn't it?
Yeah, where do you stand on that? I mean, you know, Joel Quenneville talked about it during his stint here. He wants to balance it out. That's why you didn't see Toews and Kane together for a long time. Jeremy Colliton's the same thing. Well, we want to balance. We want to get four lines rolling. But you look around the league, and other teams have their top three producers on the top line. I get that, you know, matchups where other teams can kind of match up defensively again, but where do you stand on putting those three guys together for as long as it lasts?
Yeah, it's a fun thing for us to be able to sit and debate. I mean, we're not in the coaching room. I understand what Jeremy's saying when he says, listen, we've got to have some type of balance here. We can't load it all up, and now what else plays into a factor? That is the injuries. You got Dylan Strome out, and you got Brandon Saad out, and Shaw out. So you got three top six guys out. That's an entire line of your top six that's not playing right now. So I get the balance. I still really think that you need to load a lineup. That's just my opinion. I think those guys like playing together. You could see them kind of light up as the game went on once they got to play together. And, you know, I said this on TV last night too. It's that I think that if I'm giving a message to the team, it's, all right, you three guys, we all know you three got to score. Kubalík, Kane, Toews, you guys are going to carry us. DeBrincat's going to get hot again. I believe that. I think if you score 40 goals one year, it doesn't go away. So he's your second-line guy. Put him with Kirby Doc. Your bottom six guys, I'm telling them, you guys play ping-pong out there. Mm-hmm. You don't get scored on. You give us some energy. You block shots. You give some hits. Exactly what happened in that third period last night. The game was tied. He was rolling four lines. Everybody was pretty much playing. Maybe a couple guys were not playing. He double shift Kane, but those guys, they didn't get scored on. They were responsible. They were reliable. He could keep putting them back out there. And then what happens? You get yourself to overtime. Let's let our horses go out and win it for us. And that's what happened. That's the formula for me. So I say load it up.
Here's why I think it works, because I think here's why it works both ways, right? To have Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and Kubalík on that top line, and then to move Kane to another line and balance it out, is because you're talking about a player in Patrick Kane who can create scoring chances even when they're not there, right? I mean, the guy can get separation like no other player in the league, really. So you've got a player who, even if defenses are scheming against him or that line, he's still able to do it. You can't do that with every line, you know, when teams go out there and put their best defensemen out there or their best, you know, five-on-five guys. But Kane is able to find time and space and make his linemates better. And that, to me, is why I think it works both ways. But that's why I stacked that top line. Because you wanted line to go out there, and every time they go out there, you get a chance to score.
And Jeremy did this a bit yesterday, too, is with Kane, too. We know you can play him 25 minutes, yeah, no problem. So you can play him 17, 18 minutes on that top line, and then sprinkle him in down on a third or fourth line, too. And I can tell you, playing against the Hawks back in the day when they would double shift Kane, and all of a sudden now the other team's matchups, like, I don't care if Kane's playing with the team's fourth line, you've got to get some extra, your top defenseman back out there, because he might score on playing with two fourth line guys. He might set up Carpenter backdoor for a layup. He might set up Sakura for a layup. Who knows? So you can sprinkle him in. You come off a penalty kill. Taves kills penalties. Kane doesn't. So if Taves is out there killing a penalty, you can't come back with that line. So put Kane back out there with your third or fourth line guys. Get him some extra minutes that way. Double shift him, and then you can still say we have some balance.
I think whatever line Kane is on, it's no longer the fourth
line.
That's
the first line.
Yeah, it's the first line, right?
Well, even when Kane was on the third line, he was still getting the most time, the quote-unquote third line. He's still getting the most time on ice of any forward.
Right.
And you saw that where he would double shift. He's on the third line, so he can also play with the first line and space things out. But this team is going as Kane goes right now. Another 2 points last night, two assists, including an assist on the overtime game winner where I don't think he touched the puck for some 15 to 18 seconds afterwards.
Nice assist for that.
But it was his 997th career point. We sat here a week ago. We said, by the time we were recording this show, he could have hit it. He's very close. He, in all likelihood, will hit it before the team returns home on Sunday.
Okay, when's the team? What do they got until Sunday?
So they have Montreal tonight, Wednesday night.
Yep, and then Toronto.
And then Toronto on Saturday.
And then back home Sunday.
And then back home Sunday.
So three games. He's got to get 3 points to hit 1,000. Maybe, come on, Kaner, just take one game.
He's
like,
on a
don't
seven.
Score.
He's
do
on a
here.
Seven game point streak. So just, you know, one at a time.
Yeah.
Go out, you score your one. And just don't coast, but, you know, pass the puck and make sure your teammates pass it a couple times.
I know he really, really wanted to do it in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I know his father, who doesn't like to fly, right?
Yep.
So he's had to go to, he's going to have to go to Toronto, which isn't far from his home, but, you know, he was in Ottawa. He's got to go to Montreal. He wanted him to do it in Chicago as well, but go ahead and do it on the road, Patrick. If it means a win, go ahead and do it on the road.
Yeah.
Well, and if it happens in Montreal, it's a 3-point night. Great way to do it.
Yep.
Right.
Typical Patrick Kane style, multiple points. Dominating the game, do what you do. But if he does it on Saturday in Toronto, it's going to be kind of a full circle moment, because on Friday night, he is going back to London, where the London Knights are going to retire his number on Friday night for his, you know, one season there where he put up 145 points in 58 games in 06-07. No big deal there. And then to go out and score your 1,000th point the very next night, it'll be a pretty surreal 36 hours right there.
And the reason I think it could happen there, too, is that's hockey night in Canada. In Toronto, that's, you know, for you know, Americans that don't know hockey, that's Monday Night Football, wouldn't you say? I mean, that's the big stage in Canada. Everybody watches. I wouldn't be surprised if he did it there, though.
It's a media scrum in Toronto, right, if that happens.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you're right, Burr. He likes the spotlight.
Yep.
He likes those big games. I suspect when he comes back to Chicago and – everybody can honor him Sunday with a nice video, and they can stop the game and, you know, present him with whatever for 1,000 points.
But I think you get a cool stick, don't you? Like a gold? Is it a silver stick?
I know
stick?
Games. You get a
silver one. I want to say
whatever
1,000,
he wants.
We'll 500 goals or 1,000
Chevy
points.
In there on the ice, maybe.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I was gonna say he's fourth in team scoring, and he's top four in every scoring category. I think he can get whatever he wants.
Yeah.
So, but a fantastic night it will be for him. We said the same thing last week, but a really cool moment. I know he's probably excited to get it out of the way.
Yep.
It's a lot of the conversation now, but he's headed to the All-Star game next week. And then one last thing I wanted to touch on, Robin Leonard.
Yeah.
Back in for the last two games. It's a back-to-back tonight. I imagine we'll see Corey Crawford, but Robin Leonard's won 7 of his last 8 decisions. When you take out the 3 games he missed with his knee injury, he started 8 of the last 9. He's really kind of taken the reins in terms of the starter and goal, or the guy that this team can lean on, and as you mentioned, Burr, have that production up front because of what he's doing at the back.
Yeah, and he gives, I think he gives the team defense a lot of confidence, and that's the one thing we've talked about all year, is the struggling a bit defensively in their D zone, and I think when you have a guy like him that, I mean, he's making some saves that he has no business making. I think he shocks himself half the time. But when you got that, when that's going on back there, I think it allows some of these young defensemen to relax a little bit or to make a play that they're probably thinking, gosh, should I make this play or not? The answer is usually probably no, but you know what? I like when these young guys can, like a Boqvist, when he can jump up in the play and he can try and make some passes and he can handle the puck and he can play with a little more confidence and take some chances because you know you got this guy back there and you're probably not going to get scored on for a big error. So it gives your young defenseman a lot of confidence with what he's doing back there. And I think his, and I've said this before, I think his attitude, and you can call it a swagger, or call it what you want, I think that rubs off on the team too. He says it as it is. Guys hear his interviews. Guys hear him in the locker room. When they have a bad period, he comes off and he'll cuss up and down at the bench. And that rubs off on the team a little bit. That wakes guys up.
Well, you know, it helps defensively, but also offensively. It's really allowed the Blackhawks to open it up because, you know, frankly, if you don't have good goaltending behind there, then you've got to concentrate on defense. We saw at the beginning of the season, didn't work so well as far as wins. But now that they can open up offensively, knowing that, yeah, they're going to have some odd man breaks. There's going to be some guys open and taking some high danger chances. And Leonard's been there to stop those, and to some extent Corey Crawford as well. So you've got to have that good goaltending if you're going to open it up offensively, and I think we've seen that. But, you guys, I just, you know, I love the optimism happening here. I like what's happening with the Blackhawks overall, but, you know, I'd like to see them beat a team that's not the Red Wings.
True.
Or the Ducks, you know, or the Senators. You've got to up your game here, beat some teams that are playoff teams, and then get on that kind of roll. Jeremy Calton talked about you can't get 8 or 9 in a row back, but win every 2 out of 3. They're kind of playing at that pace now, but the schedule's going to get tougher, so you got to really up your level even more.
Yeah, Montreal's struggling,
right.
But then you go into Toronto.
Right.
You go into a buzzsaw in Toronto. Let's see what happens there. Let's see. That's one where if I'm in that locker room, I'm saying, all right, we beat Ottawa, we beat Anaheim. Say they win tonight. In Montreal, all right, those are three teams that are kind of real and struggling. Now let's show people that we want to make this thing real. You keep talking about wanting to finish before the All-Star break on a high. Well, here's a good game to prove it.
Well, and also we still have not really seen a full 60 minutes, which we talked about time and time again. You know, even the game in Ottawa, you're down 2-0 in the first period to a team that hasn't won since before Christmas, I believe. Yeah. I mean, you have to put together the full 60 minutes. And I think we're starting to see more and more of that. It's good that they can fight back when they need to and have that opportunity, but it's part of the growth of this team, and it's slowly happening, and you're seeing it. But, I mean, like you said, Cook, for it to happen this season, it's got to happen quick. And, you know, you got to win some of these big games. You got to compete for the entire 60 minutes because some of these teams that you have on the last part of the schedule, they can take full advantage of it.
Well, I think, you know, what's encouraging about the Ottawa game is they weren't awful in the first period. They didn't come out flat. They weren't outplayed a lot. There were a couple of blown assignments there that led to a 2-0.
Yep.
And the thing with this team is it's very confident when it goes behind. You know, a lot of young teams sometimes go, okay, this one's over. Let's go get the next game. But when they were down 2-0 in there, and I know it was the Senators, but to me there wasn't this feeling like, oh, boy, it's going to be a long night here. It was just a matter of time before they pull together, and really, that's exactly how you had to play that game, right? You had to clamp it down a little defensively. I mean, they kept Senators' shots down where they had 5 or 6 in the third period.
Yeah, that's
the way you need to play on the road, and then you need some big goals from some big players, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it was the first two they're behind. You call it a boneheaded play. It was just a couple missed assignments off a faceoff. Coaches hate when you get scored on off a faceoff. If a point shot, fine. Some of those go through, but when it's just you're not picking up your guy, it's a very easy play off a faceoff. Certain guys stay with certain guys, and then there's a little bit of chaos, but center stays with center, defenseman on the wall, you take your guy to the net, net front, you take that guy coming to the front of the net, and it was almost a 3-on-1 at the net. So that was one where it's just like, all right, guys, just focus in a little bit, and we can get this thing back, and they did. So you could take a positive out of that.
They're also confident on the road. They've won 5 of the last 6 road games. Of course, we're saying this now before a road game, so we don't want to jinx it. But since November 8th, they have tied for first in road points with 20, tied for third in road wins with 9 in the league. They feel it on the road, and that's a good thing because coming up in February, you have 11 of your 14 games come on the road, only 3 home games in the entire month of February.
Yeah, there's some outrageous number. They're on the road 40 of the next 60 days, something like that.
Really?
Something outrageous, which, you know, normally go, oh, man, that's going to be tough. But with this team, they seem to play better on the road. They have this mentality. Ask Jeremy Collins. Like, you talk about how we have to play well at home, but now you've got to turn it around. Okay, we're on the road trip. He said, we just need to play exactly how we've been playing on the road. Keep it tight, you know, keep it within striking distance, and then, you know, get some big goals, rely on your goaltending. The young players are developing. It's just it's a better road team now than it's a home team, which, you know, normally I'd say that's not a great formula, but right now it's working for the Hawks.
Yeah, it's coming. I think it's just a, for me at least, when a young team, I think it's a confidence thing. I think you come at home, you come to this building and it's just rocking, and you're a young kid just playing. You're kind of like, holy man, like, this is crazy. This is cool. I'm playing for the Blackhawks at the United Center, and a team that hasn't strung a bunch of wins together. It's not a confident team that can just go out there and turn it on. And so I think sometimes at home you feel more pressure. And I think this team, when they go on the road, they're not expected to win. We're on the road, or, you know, we're the underdog. And I think sometimes you play a little more calm when you're not as confident. And that'd be my explanation. Who knows? But I know I had that feeling sometimes as a young player, that once I got on the road and I could, you know, I wasn't expected to put a show on for the team. I played on teams that were like that. And then all of a sudden, maybe if they go on this road trip and they do win 2 out of 3, or they win 3 out of 4 and they get a good little roll together, they start getting some confidence, I think you'll see a better home team.
Well, we can talk all day about the Blackhawks, but I do want to get moving forward, because we have an Olympic gold medalist waiting on the line for us. Kendall Coyne is joining us, a Blackhawks Originals feature coming out next Wednesday, January 22nd. Before we talk to Kendall, I know both of you have gotten a sneak peek at this. It's about 18-minute almost film. What are your thoughts on the video? Give fans just a little bit of a preview of maybe what they can look forward to, and just seeing the incredible journey that Kendall Coyne has taken, not only in her life, but within the last year of trying to advance the women's game and kind of being that vocal leader in terms of doing that.
Yeah, I don't want to be that guy, but I laughed, and at some point I cried a little bit. You know, it was a little dusty in the room. It's just, it's inspirational, right? And, you know, I've got a 10-year-old son. I was thinking, boy, I would like him to see this. I want him to look what somebody else can do with their life and inspire people. And, you know, Kendall, she was inspired by Cameron Granato growing up, and, you know, and then she's paying it forward. And it's really, I think she's a great ambassador for the game. It's a great video. I just encourage people to watch it. I'm not selling anything here. I think it's just, it's fun to, it's
your
a fun thing to
see. Paycheck's in the mail, don't worry.
Right. So we're clear on that. But I really enjoyed it. It's really well done by the group here. And Burr, I know you saw it, and it's just it's a really fun thing to watch.
Yeah, I think people will be impressed by it. And it was a neat story. And, you know, what she did, it ties everything. It ties women's hockey coming up. It ties a young girl playing hockey with boys. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, this girl that grew up in Illinois playing with boys, she ends up on the ice at the NHL All-Star game. And a couple hours, maybe a day before, gets told, oh, by the way, you're going to have to skate in the fastest skater competition because one of the guys just pulled out. It's a neat movie that people are going to enjoy. And I know she talks about you know, wanting to get more exposure for women's hockey and how the game is fast and it is skilled and it is good. And I do agree with her. And I had a sister that played women's hockey, and I always remember, and I've seen Kendall Coyne's team practice when they've done stuff in Chicago. But if you go to a women's practice, I always wish that some of my NHL teammates would, you know, go and watch this, and because this is how we should practice, because their passes are perfect. They're always on the tape. They're fast. You know, I'll be honest, you go to an NHL practice some days, there's pucks going everywhere. There's guys missing passes, shooting them into guys' skates, missing the net. The girls are, they're incredibly skilled and they're really fast. And, you could almost say like, it's a coach's dream to have a practice the way they practice, because, their skill level will blow you away.
Not only is she an Olympic gold medalist, but she does a ton of work in the Chicago community with youth camps. She has the Golden Coins program at Fifth Third Arena, getting girls into youth hockey, specifically girls, and focusing on their development. But she does a great job all
she's
the way
a stud.
Around. Like you said, she's a stud. And without further ado, it's Kendall Coyne.
So Kendall Coyne up first, an Illinois native out of Northeastern University. She scored 2 goals for the United States in Pyeongchang last February.
She was here practicing, talked to her before the events got started. She was a little nervous about it, and who wouldn't be, but an outstanding job.
We are pleased to be joined now by Kendall Coyne, a gold medalist with the U.S. women's hockey team. She drew all kinds of eyeballs last year, gentlemen, at the all-star game, competing in the fastest skater competition, and very nearly coming near at the top of the list. Kendall, thank you for joining us today. And first off, tell us a little bit about just what this last year has been like. I'm sure it's been a little bit of a whirlwind since this time last year.
Yeah, well, first off, thank you so much for having me. And it's crazy to think it's been a whole year since the All-Star weekend last year, and the moment barriers were broken. I became the first woman to compete alongside the men in the NHL All-Star Skills competition. And a lot has happened since then. And, you know, as we sit here today, I still think barriers are being broken and eyes are being put on the women's game after that moment. And it was a moment that no one could foreshadow. You know, it was a moment that happened in real time. You know, when Nathan MacKinnon got hurt, and I happened to be there, and you know, here we are today. But I think it was a big moment for our sport, because a lot of people realized, you know, women can skate. The game is fast, it's skilled, they're talented, and they're hockey players. And to be able to do that alongside the NHL All-Stars and have their reactions as pure as they were, and to have them speak as highly, you know, about us as they do their peers, really validated our game. And it was a moment that our game needed, because while I was the one to skate in that moment, in that time, the efforts of so many women and girls in the game of hockey earned that moment by putting product on the ice over the last 20 years. That's been purely fantastic product. And so without that, I don't think the NHL says okay to that moment. They say, let's move on without Nathan MacKinnon. But they've seen our game, and they've seen the growth of our game, and they said, let's do this. And it was a moment that broke a lot of barriers and got a lot of eyes on our sport.
So Kendall, when that happened, you talked about it a little bit. This wasn't planned. This wasn't like a month of talks, and all of a sudden they said, all right, and next month you're going to skate in this, and you can get ready, and you can practice. This all happened pretty fast, didn't it?
Exactly, Adam. That's exactly. Everything happened really fast. But that's the thing. I didn't even get my skates sharpened, because I thought I was the accuracy shoot. I was supposed to demonstrate the accuracy shooting competition alongside Renata Fast from Team Canada. So, you know, I didn't bring my elbow pads. I didn't sharpen my skates. I brought my stick and I taped it. That's about it. But, you know, so it all happened pretty quickly. But, you know, I have to give credit to the NHL, the NHLPA, and all the players in that moment who said yes to that, because they had to approve that of that moment. And, you know, I think with the little time I knew, it was probably better, because yeah. Not as, you know, I didn't have time to be nervous about it. You know, I had time to digest what was about to happen, and that's what happened. And I think for a lot of us in women's sports, you realize you might have one moment, one opportunity to prove to the world whatever it is you're proving. And for us in the women's hockey world, that was one of them.
How important was it to you, Kendall, to not only just show up there and skate, but skate fast, right? I mean, you went out there and I think you're the first skater, clean sheet of ice. You got all the eyes on you. Your skates aren't sharp, but you didn't want to just go out there and cruise around. You went pretty fast, and I think you beat a couple of NHLers. How important was it to show everyone around the world that not only can we go out on the ice, but we can do really well out there?
Well, Chris, I think, you know, it's the argument that it's not even an argument, but it's the conversation that we have over and over again, and it's that, you know, the women's game is equally as entertaining as the men. Yes, they're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster in some cases, but our game is equally as entertaining. And so for eyes to finally be on, you know, me in that moment, I've been skating like that since I was 3 years old. So it wasn't anything out of the ordinary for me. And it was, you know, you've been doing this since you were 3 years old. It's like riding a bike. Just go out there and do what you do. And, you know, I skate like that all the time. So that was, and to be honest, if there was one skill that I was going to be comfortable doing in that moment, it would have been that one. Accuracy shooting, not so much. I'm more of a passer. But I think, you know, what was so great about that moment was the platform it was skated on. And that's why it became so big. And that's what we're fighting for in the women's hockey community, is to try and build a platform that people are watching this game not every 4 years at the Olympics, and we're relevant every year, because we're working every year, every single day. But we don't always have that platform to showcase our speed, our skill, our talent. I mean, Brianna Decker, my teammate, took second to Leon Draisaitl in the premier passer event, and he's having quite a year. So, you know, it's we continue to get these opportunities that we earn and we seize them. So it's how do we make them more consistent?
Now we get to this year, and you guys are going to be doing a 3-on-3 competition. You're going to be there. What will that be like? And do you know who your teammates are going to be at? Can you announce that, or can you tell us who you're playing with or what the teams are?
I don't know who my teammates are quite yet, but I'm really excited for the opportunity. You know, I think when you think back to 2017, when women were first incorporated into the All-Star Weekend in Tampa, there were four of my teammates because we were training for the Olympics down there. Hillary Knight did a fantastic job in the accuracy shooting competition. And then, you know, 2 years later, you know, here we are with, you know, women, you know, competing alongside the men, and then now incorporating 20 women, and we get to play the game we love. 3-on-3, it's fast, it's skilled, and we get to put together all of the skills you see in the competition in a game. So I'm really excited for the opportunity. I'm excited for the fans in St. Louis to be able to watch us play.
Ken, I know you want to play good hockey, and you know, it's be great to do things in the skills competition, but I know that you take your role as a role model very seriously. Why do you take it that seriously, and can you talk a little bit about your role model growing up? I know there's a special hockey player that you followed along from the Chicago area. Talk about that dynamic and how that made you kind of the player you are and the inspiration you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. Growing up, I wanted to be Chris Chelios. I wore number 7 for as long as I could remember, and that was until I met Cami Granato. She's from Downers Grove, and I met her at her hockey camp when I was 7, right after the 1998 Olympic Games. I don't remember watching that game at all. I don't remember anything. All I remember was a few short months later at Seven Bridges Ice Arena in Woodridge, walking into her hockey camp and seeing over 100 girls there playing hockey. And I held her gold medal, and I turned to my parents. I said, I want to go to the Olympics. You know, girls win gold medals and boys win Stanley Cups. And it was definitely at a time when there weren't many girls playing hockey, and a lot of kids in elementary school at the time would tell me, girls don't do hockey, go play sports that normal girls play. And, you know, floor hockey was my favorite unit, and it was all the other girls' least favorite unit. And so when I walked into her hockey camp and I held her gold medal, it changed my life forever. I wanted to chase something that she had. And if I didn't see her, I don't know where my life would have went in terms of sports. There was a time that I thought maybe hockey isn't for girls because I was listening to everyone. And then I went back to meeting Cami and seeing all those other girls and telling myself, well, girls do play hockey. Like, I can do this. It doesn't matter that I play with boys. Like, there are other girls out there. And so, to me, that feeling of empowerment that Cami gave me at such a young age is something that stuck with me to this day at 27 years old. And it's a feeling that I want to try and give back to other young athletes, girls and boys. And if it can help inspire them to follow their dreams like I did mine, then I'm doing my job as a role model. And it's a job that I take very seriously. And it's an honor if I can be a young person's role model. So I hope I can always be the best role model I can be and the best version of myself for them.
Kendall, every time I see you, I ask you this question, you have so much on your plate. Every time I see you or I check the internet, you're somewhere, you're doing something, you're practicing, you're training, you're playing in a World Cup event, in an Olympic tryout event, in doing some work with the Blackhawks, you're teaching kids. What's on your plate right now? Can you give the listeners an idea of what's going on in your world right now?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot. You know, last night my husband and I were at an event for our foundation, and then coming up here, I'll be heading to St. Louis, and then we have training camp for the rivalry series in Anaheim, and then we play 3 games against Canada in Victoria, Vancouver, and then Anaheim, and then in between that, I'm doing some San Jose Sharks broadcasting games, and then every day I'm on the ice and then working out. So it's, you know, about 4 to 5 hours worth of work, 5 days a week. And then recently I was in Toronto with our Players Association that we formed this summer. So those are the games I get when I'm not with the national team. And other than that, I'm here in our house in Orland Park. And then my husband's a free agent this year, so we'll see what happens and where we go next. But that's the current docket for you.
That's it, huh? Just a little bit. We all thought we worked hard here, so guys, we better get moving.
Maybe the Bears need a free agent? Are you going to push the Bears for a free agent signing there?
Oh, that'd be a dream come true.
Now, the state of women's hockey is in a bit of a flux right now. In your perfect world, what do you envision happening with women's hockey professionally moving forward?
Well, I think, you know, back up to Adam's last question regarding, you know, what's on the docket of my schedule. I think when you asked that second question of, you know, the professional women's hockey being in shambles and what do I hope it looks like? I hope it looks, my schedule clears up. I hope it's, you know, you're a professional athlete and, you know, Adam, you live that life. That's your focus every single day is how do I be the best hockey player I can be for the franchise that I'm a part of. And right now we don't have the opportunity to do that. So we're up every day on the ice by ourselves, working out by ourselves, getting together here and there. Currently, you know, we don't make any money with our players association. And when I did play professional hockey, my salary was $7,000. So I would consider that a donation at that rate. But you know, I hope to see a professional league that builds a franchise based off merit that brings the best players all over the world together under one umbrella and is able to do so because of the resources that that league provides. You just saw the WNBA sign an 8-year CBA agreement with the WNBA. And, you know, it was, you know, the players can be making up to $500,000. And, to me, that seems like such a dream. And we're so far away from that in women's hockey, but we have to start somewhere. And I think that's what our Players Association goal is, and I hope we see a true professional league, you know, based on a merit and based on, you know, players making a livable wage so that they can focus on their craft day in and day out, just like a true professional athlete does.
And how about internationally? We all see that the great rivalry between Canada and the U.S. Are other countries catching up, and guess where do we stand as far as international competition when you've got these two powerhouses and other teams, other countries kind of in the shadows trying to get there?
Oh yeah. I mean, the rest of the world is coming. The past world championships, Team Canada took the bronze medal. Finland beat them and we played Finland in the gold medal game and won in a shootout. So it's not just the U.S. and Canada anymore. And it's hard because that narrative is always told, but the rest of the world is right behind us. And I think, you know, if we had a true professional league, people would be able to see how great those players are overseas. In my opinion, the best defenseman in the world, Jenny Hierakoski, no one's ever seen her. People don't talk about her. And she's arguably the best defenseman to ever play the game. But if we had a professional league that allowed, you know, the best players from all over the world, regardless of where they're from, to play under one umbrella, people would know the women's game a lot better. But we just don't have that platform right now. And if we had that platform, all of those other countries would be able to get the resources that we have here in North America and bring them back to their national programs. And it would only grow the game exponentially. You know, and the Olympic Games, who knows what that becomes, because right now we're very, very fortunate here in North America to have excellent resources for women's hockey from our national programs, USA Hockey and Hockey Canada. But that's not the case with a lot of those other countries. Hence, the Four Nations Cup was canceled by the Swedish Federation. So, you know, it's an everyday battle. But I really hope that a lot of those players have the ability to come over to North America, play professionally, so people can see some of the best players in the world compete.
Kendall, thank you very much for joining us. I know you're an inspiration not only to girls, little girls everywhere, but athletes and men alike. The documentary is called As Fast As Her, because you are that inspiration. Girls want to grow up to be as fast as you. It's been a whirlwind last year for you, and I know myself watching it, I was inspired by it as a male hockey player. So I can only imagine what little girls look up to you and the way they feel seeing you in that light and what you and the rest of the women's hockey players are doing to grow the game and grow the sport. So thank you for that. Thank you for joining us. And, you know, it's a great documentary that comes out on January 22nd on Blackhawks.com/fastasher.
Thanks, Kendall.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Gentlemen, a great conversation with Kendall Coyne, and yeah. For those who don't know, her husband, by the way, is an NFL player.
Yeah,
Michael Schofield. He's played for the Chargers, I think, the last year or two.
Yep.
She mentioned it. He's a free agent, but a lot of talent in that household.
Chris is making a pitch for him to come to the
Bears.
Yeah,
Chris is going to be on the phone next. Yeah. And, we'll have a contract.
Bears
can use
some lineman help, so we'll bring him in here and make everybody happy.
Well, a great conversation with her. I know we touched on it, but Blackhawks.com/fastasher is the site. You can go look at everything there. There's a quick teaser now. There'll be a trailer out next Monday, and the full documentary comes out on Wednesday the 22nd. Gentlemen, thanks for bearing with me this week.
Get yourself better.
You guys took the brunt of the show, and I appreciate that.
You're playing hurt, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, we appreciate you.
Yeah, go get healthy.
We'll be back next week with Blackhawks Insider for Adam Burrish and Chris Cook. I am Carter Baum. Thank you for joining us on Blackhawks Insider, presented by Chevy Drive Chicago. Drive what Kane and Taves drive.